Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us once again today Dr. Don Ewart, a microbiologist who spent most of his career studying molecular and cell biology of the immune system, as well as the evolution of the immune system. Dr. Ewart has his PhD from the University of Georgia in 1976, and he spent most of his career as a microbiologist operating a research laboratory at the Wistar Institute in Philadelphia, where his research has been supported by the National Institute of Health, the National Science Foundation, and the Department of Agriculture. Now, I gave a warning at the beginning of our previous podcast that Dr. Ewart's answers were going to be somewhat technical. I'm going to reiterate that here. Dr. Ewart, he is extremely knowledgeable about the immune system. So if this podcast gets a little bit technical, have no fear. Keep listening. There's something in this podcast for everyone. And maybe just try to take from what you can. But just be forewarned, this is going to get technical. And I think that that's to Dr. Ewart's credit as a researcher in this field. Dr. Ewart, thank you so much for coming back on the show with us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, in the previous podcast, we were discussing your arguments why the vertebrate adaptive immune system does not use Darwinian processes to produce antibodies. And of course, this is in response to arguments from BioLogos, namely some arguments from earlier in 2010 by Catherine Applegate, that the vertebrate immune system does serve as an example of how random Darwinian processes can produce biological complexity. And you, of course, have posted a response to those arguments on Evolution News and Discovery.org, showing why they are not like Darwinian processes. And so we didn't have enough time to finish up your discussion in the previous podcast, so I'd like to pick back up where we left off before, and I was hoping you could give us a brief outline of how the adaptive immune system generates antibody diversity.
So this is one of the most interesting stories of science, the generation of antibody diversity. You know, probably a half a century ago, when the genes that encode the variable region or the antigen binding end of the immunoglobulin were sequenced, it was discovered that they consisted of three gene segments that were separated in the germline of jawed vertebrates. They were separated. When you looked at a mature B lymphocyte that was producing antibody, those three gene segments were all lined up next to each other. And it was this mechanism of joining these three segments that was found to actually generate millions of different receptors with different specificities from a relatively few genes. The variable end of the receptor is generated by shuffling and joining the segments from three different pools from the variable, the diversity, and the joining segments. These pools are separated in the germline, and when they combine, the combined diversity generated by recombination produces a potential repertoire of about 100 billion different receptor specificities, an amazing feat of molecular biology. But the joining of the VDJ segments is orchestrated by a set of enzymes we call RAG1 and RAG2, which cleave the DNA at specific markers called recombination signal sequences, which flank the three different gene segments, the VDJ segments. This RAG2 complex brings the segments together, and the segments are joined using repair mechanisms of the cell. But the shuffling in the VDJ segments alone is limited to generate diversity. The additional diversity is generated by imprecise joining and the inclusion of nucleotides at the junctions of the VDJ segments. During the process, gaps in the joined DNA are filled with other nucleotides, and these changes generate thousands of new ways of folding the protein. And this is basically the mechanism that is used to generate the receptor diversity of antibody molecules in a very elegant process.
Well, that sounds like a very complex process. And of course, one of the main points that you make in your essay in response to Catherine Applegate is that these processes are carefully controlled and that the mutations that are taking place here are very different from random mutations. So can you explain how is this process that generates antibody diversity, how is it carefully controlled, and is it a chance-based process analogous to, say, the random mutations that we're familiar with that underlie Darwinian evolution?
Well, the RAG proteins that actually are the machinery for bringing these genes together belong to a family of proteins called transposases. As the name implies, these proteins are able to cut and paste segments of DNA in the genome. This process would otherwise be highly disruptive in normal operations, if not lethal to the organism. Thus, the transposon components of the RAG gene have been tightly controlled. The RAG proteins are regulated at both the transcriptional and post-transcriptional levels, and the co-expression of RAG1 and RAG2 is limited only to lymphoid cells. The reaction is tightly regulated at multiple levels, highly specific, unlike Darwinian evolution. And we could go into a lot of detail here, but I suggest you read the article. But the point being is that the actual mechanism that is generating the diversity is not left to chance. It is highly regulated.
And, of course, Dr. Ewart, this is just the first step in the process that generates and amplifies antibodies in our immune system. So can you explain the process of affinity maturation and somatic cell hypermutation for us, which are the next major steps in this process?
Yes, well, it's hard to be brief, but I'll try. Once the B cell begins to proliferate, each of the progeny cells undergoes a process which introduces mutations in the variable end or antigen binding end of the immunoglobulin molecule, the genes encoding the molecule. The rate of mutations is phenomenal. It is 6 orders of magnitude greater than the average spontaneous mutation rate. These mutations are designed to produce slight changes in the regions of the antigen combining site of the antibody. They're called the complementary determining region. But as a result, the clonal progeny of the activated B cell each have slightly different affinity for the antigen. And each of these clonally derived B cells then pass through a gauntlet of cells that present the antigen. These cells are found in lymph nodes and spleen. And the B cells with the receptors that bind weakly or not at all are programmed to die by a process of programmed cell death. And those that can bind will continue to proliferate. So you can see there's some of the hallmarks of a Darwinian process, but that's not the whole story.
So how are these processes also carefully controlled, and do they bear any resemblance to random mutation or natural selection?
That's the issue. There's actually 2 levels of control. One is cellular and the other is molecular that control these processes. The antibody-producing cells that encounter a protein antigen require the assistance of a class of T lymphocytes called T helper cells. As well, what's involved is the interaction of a class 2 major histocompatibility proteins. This interaction tightly regulates the B cell response. But at the molecular level, a very, very interesting, sophisticated process is taking place. Somatic hypermutation utilizes highly dangerous enzymes to make untemplated, that is, unprogrammed changes at very precise regions of the DNA. Somatic hypermutation is initiated by an enzyme called a activation cytidine deaminase, which deaminates cytidine residues in single-stranded DNA that are exposed during the immunoglobulin gene transcription. Control of activity of this enzyme is essential for several reasons. First, it is essential to cause only subtle changes that alter the affinity of the receptor, the variable region of the receptor for the antigen, but not the specificity of the antigen combining site. So these are very, very subtle changes that are occurring, not major changes, and that's essential not to completely cause the antibody to lose its specificity. Second, the variable region which contains the complementarity determining region genes is adjacent to the constant region of the gene. So that's really the business end. The constant end is the end of the immunoglobulin protein that must be relied on to communicate information to downstream mechanisms that are responsible for eliminating the pathogen. So it's important not to cause any mutations in that. That must remain constant. So it must be highly specific and focused. Any changes that occur have to be focused. Third, the enzymes like AID that alter the genetic code have the potential to wreak havoc on the information that's contained in the genome. Therefore, their activity must be regulated to preserve the integrity of the organism. So regulation is extremely important. The interesting thing is after the cytidine deaminase actually introduces mutations, normally enzymes would come in and repair those. What's very fascinating that's been discovered recently is that that region where the hypermutation takes place has a set of nucleotides that are arranged in a way that subverts the activity of the repair enzyme. So rather than doing repair at the site, it's actually enforcing all of the mutations that are made and increasing the number of mutations. So it's a highly specific and regulated process, but it's actually very intricate. Furthermore, what's really important to realize is that there's no significant new information that is being generated by somatic hypermutation. The nucleotide changes are limited to replacing amino acids that alter the electric forces between proteins, but the specificity of the antigen receptor remains unaltered, unlike processes that would be involved in Darwinian evolution. This is focused highly regulated.
Yes, this does not sound like Darwinian evolution in that the mutations are very carefully regulated and obviously targeted at certain parts of the genome. So finally, there's an example in this process that some would say is like selection, where the immune system causes certain useful cells to produce useful antibodies to be amplified. So is this an unguided process that's analogous to Darwinian natural selection?
I think you're referring to what is goes back a long ways. It was Burnett's clonal selection theory. And in fact, the reality selection and activation of antigen reactive clones of B cells is highly orchestrated event, and it's really not left to chance. The activation of an antigen reactive cell requires the assistance, as I mentioned, of a class of T lymphocytes called T helper cells, as well as the interaction with major histocompatibility proteins. This double T conformation, that is, the T cell has to see the same antigen as the B cell, and then they interact to actually elicit the B cell's development, final production of antibodies. This double key conformation process prevents false starts and conserves energy and reduces the risk that antibodies will be made against self-antigens. Now, I'm going to ask, how do these two B cells that happen to now run into the same antigen get together? Well, with several million B and T lymphocytes distributed throughout the body, this is no simple task. While the chance of two cells encountering the same antigen and then coming together is very small, the activated B and T cells are programmed to release specialized proteins called chemokines that attract one another. And this all occurs within the confines of particular compartments found within lymphoid organs, such as the lymph nodes and spleen. So what you see here is a collaboration of cells and molecules, as well as tissues, to produce an immune response. If these encounters were left to chance alone, the adaptive immune system could not mount a response in time to defend the host against a proliferating pathogen.
Dr. Ewart, your knowledge of the immune system is really a bit overwhelming, and we're very thankful that you're here to explain this to us. I hope that our listeners have been able to follow a lot of your arguments here, and obviously the great thing about a podcast is you can listen to it over and over again until you finally start to understand it. And of course, Dr. Ewart's arguments are also found in his essay in response to BioLogos at evolutionnews.org and also at discovery.org. So I want to close this up with a bit of a more familiar question that our listeners, I hope, will be able to follow very easily. You write in your paper that, quote, antibody development is certainly not a blind or random process. What on the surface may seem like a random process is in fact an elegantly designed and regulated process. And when viewed as a system, the highly complex, integrated, and regulated operation of the immune system bears little resemblance to the undirected blind processes that are theorized to drive Darwinian evolution, unquote. I certainly don't think I could have said it any better, but can you sum up for our listeners finally here why the processes that generate antibody diversity show intelligent design rather than Darwinian evolution, and maybe put this at a level that the average listener can really understand here?
Okay, well, I'll try. I hope, if anything, this just brief and sketchy discussion of the development of antibodies will entice people to get involved in learning more about the immune system. It's quite amazing. But based upon our current knowledge about antibody development, which I briefly outlined, I contend that what may appear to be a random process is actually highly orchestrated at many different levels. At the organismal level, that is, during development, each of these cell types I've mentioned, the B cells, the T cells, the antigen-presenting cells, all begin from basically stem cells, which are very much like each other, but they all have separate developmental pathways that have to bring them together. They have to express specific proteins so that they can interact with each other. We also have tissues that are developed, the lymphoid tissues. These are sites where these lymphocytes and antigen-presenting cells are brought together, and they provide an environment in which they can interact. At the cellular level, we have the B cells, the T cells, and antigen-presenting cells, each with separate developmental pathways. We have the proteins, the major histocompatibility antigens, all of the enzymes, RAGs, transcription factors, and cytokines that all have to be produced in the particular place where they're useful and the types of cells where they can interact. And then we have the genetic regulation, as we mentioned, with hypermutation, the specific placement of cytidine and guanidine residues, nucleotides, as well as the whole conformation of the chromosome that allows particular genes to be expressed. If anything, I hope you get the picture that this is a highly orchestrated process. The function and structures of these specialized components must be coordinated to produce a specific antibody response to an antigenic challenge. Independent development programs of the cell lineages, tissues, organs must be controlled to ensure that their location and structure permit their interactions required for development of the B cell and of the antibody response. Furthermore, the combined function and development aspects of antibody production involve a hierarchical matrix of regulatory controls that orchestrate the entire process. I had thought for many years we were going to get on top of how the immune system operates, but even the last 10 years, subsequent to sequencing of the genome, we found that the regulatory processes create a matrix, a highly regulated matrix of cellular interactions that is incredibly complex. I'd say that antibody development is certainly not a blind or random process. What on the surface may seem like a random process is, in fact, an elegantly designed and regulated process. And if anything, I think the processes involved in antibody development are not analogous to Darwinian evolution, but rather suggest the work of a programmer who developed a complex system to sustain and protect the biological integrity of each organism in a constant changing environment.
Well, Dr. Ewart, thank you so much for taking the time to explain this to us and our listeners. We really appreciate the work you've done. And again, the essay is titled Adaptive Immunity, Chance or Necessity? And you can find the essay at evolutionnews.org or discovery.org. I'm Casey Luskin. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.